This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
My guest tonight on Bent Notes is a Melbourne-based vocalist who's also an arranger and band leader. She has performed at jazz festivals in Indonesia, Estonia, Finland, the North Sea Jazz Festival in Netherlands, Korea, New Zealand, Thailand, as well as our own Australian festivals as well. She's travelled the world singing. Michelle started violin lessons at the age of eight.
Eight is too late.
Eight is too low.
Let me tell you.
And grew up listening to pop music and tunes from old movies, and then taught herself to play piano. In addition to the violin, Michelle also sang with as many choirs as she could fit into, I'm told, and she played cornet as well in the local marching band. So it's violin, vocals, piano and cornet. It's my pleasure to welcome to the Bent Notes studio at Joy 94.9, Michelle Nicole.
G'day. Thank you, David.
A pleasure to have you in studio, Michelle.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, whilst you are known for your jazz vocalisations, you're not a stranger to the world of the classics because, as I understand it, you started your university education in the classical stream.
I did. I started on violin. I actually did try to get in on singing, but they didn't let me in. They let me in on violin. So I think, I don't know why. I must have been pretty terrible. But I was pretty terrible at violin as well, so who knows. But I wouldn't say I was a real classical musician. I basically played the repertoire I had to play, and playing the violin kind of meant you just had to play classical. That's all I was introduced to. I didn't know anything about jazz the music I grew up on was my mum and dad's music, you know, and the TV and Countdown and like every other kid that grew up in the 70s and 80s.
So growing up with the likes of Countdown, classical in itself would have been a little bit out there, wouldn't it?
Well, it was, but you know, you remember, I mean, I was kind of playing it, but we weren't listening to it or anything. I mean, apart from when Hooked on Classics came out.
I remember
everyone had that album and I loved it. I thought it was amazing. So the bits that I got were really very, it wasn't deep at all. It was pretty shallow, but it was, when I got to uni, I got a bit more into it, but I think I was really meant to do music other than classical, I would say.
Which you have done as the years have gone by. What, in that first year at uni, what did you enjoy most about that classical world?
Look, I don't know that I enjoyed singing in the concert choir, which was like a choir which sang classical repertoire, and I really enjoyed that. And the classical violin stuff I was doing, I found really kind of hard, to be honest, because I wasn't really into that music. I mean, I really wasn't listening to it. And I think you have to be listening to the music to want to play it. And I was doing it because I had to, and I had a really heavy-duty violin teacher who basically hated my guts. And so once I started listening to jazz and actually hearing my mates around me talk about jazz and they were actually playing it, and I thought, wow, this is something you can actually do. And it never even occurred to me because I'd never been introduced to it. I mean, I grew up in the country town where still nobody knows about jazz where I grew up.
So were you introduced to jazz by other classical students?
No, just the other people in my year. Like, for instance, I remember very clearly sitting in the cafe one day with one of my mates who was a drummer. He was a drum, his major was drums. And he was saying last night he'd gone to see Miles Davis at the Theberton Theatre. This is in Adelaide. Yeah. And I was like, oh, right, who's Miles Davis? You know, not even knowing who Miles Davis was. So I kind of like got introduced through my friends at uni, and then by playing in the studio orchestra. So I was a violinist in a studio orchestra, and we had a visit from the North Texas University, the 1 o'clock lab band. They came to Adelaide Uni. Well, it wasn't Adelaide Uni then anyway. It doesn't really matter. But they came out, and I was part of the string orchestra with this big band, and we did a big concert at the Festival Theatre, and I loved it. And I remember them sort of making jokes about how string players can't swing, you know, like classic brass versus string, you know, big bands versus string, sort of making those jokes. And I was thinking, I don't know what you mean. I don't even know what you mean by swing, because I didn't know. I was just doing it. Got into it that way, found and just started listening to my local radio station, heard a jazz record that made me ring up the station and go, what was that?
Oh, really?
Fair Dinkum. And it was Vince Jones.
Of all all the opportunities around.
And the song was Never Let Me Go, and it's on For All Colours, and I rushed out and bought that record. You know, in those days you had to go to a record shop. You couldn't just dial it up on your phone.
No. Would have been Brushes or someone like that.
It was a bit more specialised, I would say.
Oh, even than that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a pretty organic introduction, I guess, to playing jazz and hearing jazz.
At what point did you decide that I'm not doing any more classical, I'm going to go jazz?
Oh, it's all very boring, David. Do you really want to hear this?
Yeah, I'm interested.
Well, I was singing in the jazz choir, got into the jazz choir.
While you were doing the classical?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was training to be a high school music teacher. So we were all learning, this is in the day where you had a four-year teaching degree, you know. So I was doing violin, but then you also had a minor instrument, and everyone had to do a different instrument every year. So like in first year, I did flute for a year, then I did cello for a year and trombone for a year. You had to do it as part of your degree. So in one of the years, second year, I had to have a back operation and I wasn't allowed to play the violin for a while. And it was like, oh, thank God, because I was so terrible at it. I never practiced. And the head of the course, who was also the director of the jazz choir, said to me, would you rather be doing voice? I said, yes. And he let me swap my major because he kind of knew that he could fashion me to be his little jazz star of the choir, because he needed, you know, he was one of those teachers who would always bolster some particular student, and I was that person. So that's kind of how it happened.
And that was because he could see your enthusiasm and skill? Maybe.
Yeah. I don't really know. He must have seen something, but I was into it, yeah.
When you got introduced to jazz and started down that path, could you see similarities between what was this new world and what you'd just been through from the classical perspective?
Look, I guess what the thing I noticed is that to be good at it, you had to work hard, right? And I knew that was the case for classical. But the problem is I didn't want to work hard because I didn't love it. You see? It
makes a difference when you love something.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and I would have mates playing violin who would practice. I never practiced. I'd practice just before an exam and, you know, just get by the skin of my teeth. And but then I started realising with jazz, you know, oh, you could get really good at it if you practice, and there's actually things to work on. I was like, oh, well, I want to do that. So it was, I guess realising that, you know, to be good at music, it's not just a natural. I mean, there's a part of it that is a natural ability, but to actually be good, you have to actually work hard. And I wanted to work hard for the first time.
You're known as someone who is able to get to the heart of a song, get the real meaning out of it, but also as a very innovative, on-the-fly improviser. Now, the way you improvise and phrase doesn't always sound like someone singing. It's more like an instrument than a voice. How did you learn your improvisation skills to get such a fluid sound?
Well, look, I think like all improvisers, it's through listening. It's a language. It's learning their vocabulary through listening to other people playing and developing a vocab. So listening to horn, for me as a singer, listening to a lot of horn players and learning their solos. So learning the phrases, learning the rhythmic phrases, the melodic and harmonic sort of context. So it really came from listening and studying it. There's a point where, like I said, where it can be quite a natural and you can sort of just do it to a point, but then you inevitably hit a brick wall. So you've got to get beyond that. So it's really learning vocabulary through listening.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
My guest is Melbourne-based jazz vocalist and improviser, Michelle Nicole. Now, Michelle, we've been talking about getting to the heart of a song, learning how to improvise and phrase and sound like an instrument, listening to things that go on. In your quartet, which is the Michelle Nicole Quartet, you have been performing with that quartet for a number of years. You do this all the time.
Well, we do. And you know, actually this year is the 20th year since our first album.
Really?
But it's not quite the original band. Ronnie and I played on the album, but Jeff, our guitarist, he actually started playing with us in 1999. So next year, I guess we'll celebrate the 20th. I mean, it's kind of hard, but the first album was actually released in 98. I think, look, having people to play with that you get on really well with and you have like same sort of goal with the music and you feel comfortable to try things out and explore stuff is a huge advantage, and it's kind of a luxury in jazz, you know. I mean, we're all freelance, of course, we all do different bands and stuff, but that quartet is kind of like special to me, and it's the only band that I record with. So, but the songs are number one to me, like the actual song and the meaning of the song. Like before, when you played Mr. Lucky, like that was for a specific project where we were doing Mancini compositions, and that song, look, we've played maybe three or four times since recording, that was it, because it's so weird. It's a weird song. I don't know that I truly connected to that song, but mostly I have to connect with them, and having a great band helps you to do that too, but I'm always looking at the song first.
Do the other members of the band do likewise when they're looking to improvise and
I reckon that they're kind of like looking at music pretty deeply. I don't actually know if they think about the lyrics that much, but I certainly know the great jazz players I play with, they know the lyrics to the songs. You know, like if I have a brain fade and can't remember what's the first line, they'll be able to tell it to me. You know, so they do know the songs, not just the chord structures and the form, which is like the trap that a lot of jazz musicians fall into, that it just becomes like a basic vehicle for improvisation. Doesn't really matter what the song is. It can just be, it just becomes a whole bunch of fancy chord changes and scales, you know. So I think we all have that sensibility that we love music, the songs, and want to shape that, and I guess the exploration of the song is what the improv is.
Having conversations with each other as your musical conversations, that is, as you go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like every time you play, if you think of it like it's like a little dinner party, you know, and you've got four people at the table and you've all got something to say and all add, and maybe someone dominates for a bit. Maybe someone gets a bit too drunk and it gets annoying. But basically, that's how I see it. It's like a group conversation. It's not one person leading everything and a band of people following and backing that thing. It is really very interactive. That should be what it's about.
I'm going to look at the next quartet I see in a completely different light now, figure out who's eating what,
yes,
when and where,
who's
got drinking.
The food allergies.
Exactly. Did Bach have conversations like that?
I think so. Look, I'm not going to claim to be an expert on Bach now, David. I would not do that to your listeners, but I absolutely am. And improvisation was, of course, a big part of that sort of Baroque music. But if you listen to it, absolutely, the way that things weave and interact with each other, you know, the counter, the parts together, it's very jazz.
And you're jazzifying Bach in a project that you've had running now for a couple of years.
Yes.
The Bach, very appropriate name.
Did
the
you
Bach
like that?
Project.
I put a lot of thought into that one. The Bach project, yeah.
Where did the project come from? Why did you decide that Bach was the composer to jazzify?
Well, once again, you know, in the jazz world, like a gig is a gig. And we were asked to play at the Adelaide Bach Festival a few years ago.
I imagine a festival of Bach is a fairly classical.
Yes. We were the, in inverted commas, jazz. We all got to have a bit of jazz. And guess what? It was late night jazz.
Oh, okay.
So late night in Adelaide was like a 8 o'clock gig.
Ooh, oh, right.
You know,
okay.
Might have been 9 o'clock, pushing it down. You know, yeah, we were the jazz component. But they did want, they said, you do whatever you like, but it's a Bach festival. So, and Jeff, our guitarist, Jeff Hughes, he's a crazily, what would you say, smart musician and knows a lot and plays a lot of, had played a lot of classical music as well, guitar. I went through a whole bunch of Bach stuff and picked the songs that I knew, the hits, you know, the big hits, and asked Jeff as well, like, have you got any particular songs that you really like, Bach pieces? And Tom, our double bass player, he picked one. So we kind of just came together and brought like an hour repertoire to play at this festival. And it was such a lovely experience. And then we left it and the boys in the band said, Shell, we should really record that, because it was a lovely thing. And I said, well, we should do that. So when we had the opportunity to do the recital centre, I thought, well, this would be a nice project to get back up again.
It would indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. When you decided this is going to be it, because this is what the Bach Festival has asked for, mm-hmm. Did you grab those bits of music and then spend hours and hours poring over them to decide how you're going to treat them, or did you just...
Yes.
Get together and try it.
No, I thought about it hard, and some of the pieces I had ideas, and I said to Jeff, this is my idea. Do you want to take this one and do something with it? So one of the pieces, for instance, Bistou by Mia, which is like an aria, an old aria from one of the sort of operas that doesn't really exist anymore, but it's a very sad song, like they're kind of, Jeff totally reworked. But yeah, I spent a lot of time looking at the songs, thinking of them as songs, if they were actually lyric pieces, and the instrumental ones, just finding ways where we could stretch out the improvisation and bring it, I guess, play how we want to play it. We're not being too sort of stuck in a Bach. It's not classical what we're doing. It's certainly not classical.
Is it all Bach, or have you also got some other stuff treating in a Bach
style?
Yes,
exactly. So we're doing a couple of things. We're combining Bach, like the introduction might be a Bach thing, then it might go into a jazz tune. Like, for instance, we're doing Round Midnight, and I've sort of fused that with the little fugue in G minor. Yes. So, you know, it's a little bit of fusing. What's that word? Mushing? No, what's that? Moshing?
Mashing.
It's a bit of a mash-up fest. And then we're doing some straight pieces that are Bach. You know, the notes are all Bach, but we're playing them how I imagine how Ornette would play them, Ornette Coleman, for instance. So we're trying to do it that way. But, yeah, I don't know how I'd put my finger. I wouldn't know what to call it, really, other than it's just us playing some Bach stuff.
But it's not classical.
But it's certainly not classical.
It's a jazzified Bach and a Bachified jazz.
Yeah. I mean, basically it's just playing those, treating them like songs, treating them like little things that then we explore, and exactly like if you were taking a Mancini piece. It's just doing exactly the same thing. So it's taking the existing melody and harmony and lyric, if there was one, and exploring it as far as we can. Yeah.
We heard March in D Ornette to kick off the program tonight. Yeah. And we've got the Minuet in G coming up just a moment.
All right. Well, that's the big hit.
The big hit.
And it was originally in G, but I have to tell you, it's actually in E. Oh, no, maybe it's still in G, but yeah, I had to change the key.
Oh, did you now?
Yeah, it's a little bit controversial. I'm not sure.
Changing your key of something from Bach.
I know. It could put people off, couldn't it? But yeah, there's
only people with perfect pitch.
Yeah, exactly. The purists.
That's it.
The purists are going to hate it anyway, so like, let's not worry about that.
Would Bach hate it?
I don't know.
My understanding from what I've heard is that Bach was really the improviser of his time.
Well, then if he was, I would like to think that he would approve of the idea. I mean, I reckon that anyone who likes improvisation, I mean, it's like when we take any song, you take any sort of tune and you think, okay, what would I do if the composer was sitting in the corner of the room? Would I be proud to play it in front of them, or would I be embarrassed thinking they're going to hate this? I reckon that the spirit of the jazz composers is that they want you to go nuts with it. You know, they want you to breathe new life into it and make it your own. So I reckon Bach, let's hope. But we're never going to know, David.
We're not. But I think he probably would, because he certainly had fun in what he's done.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So you're at the Melbourne Recital Centre next Saturday night at 8 o'clock?
7 p.m.
7 o'clock.
Yeah, it only goes for 1 hour. So if you rock up at 8 o'clock, you're going to miss it.
That will be a problem.
Yeah.
So 7 o'clock next Saturday night, June the 23rd.
Yes.
You're in the Salon. What a beautiful space
it is. It's beautiful, yeah. We've played there many times.
In the round?
It is in the round.
Oh,
yeah,
beautiful.
I like it in the round, yeah.
Magnificent. More details from melbournerecital.com.au. Tickets and details about the gig itself and where the theatre is located, or the salon is located down there in South Bank. What a marvellous night it will be.
I hope so, yeah.
Michelle, Nicole, thank you so much for dropping in tonight. We're going to have a listen now to Minuet in G.
Okay.
From the Michelle Nicole Quartet on Joy
94.9. No,
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.